Practice, and especially about the some of the more, could say, advanced or deeper levels of insight meditation or the practice of vipassana. Now the word vipassana, it's made up of the word pasana, which means seeing, in the prefix vipassana. The prefix v means more or less to divide things up or seeing things in their parts. And some people say seeing in a special way, but that special way means seeing things divided up into their parts rather than the whole. So let's say, for example, when you look at a person, you're seeing, oh, that's so-and-so. That's just a person. You're seeing the whole. Whereas for the Buddha or somebody with, wisdom, when they see a person, they'll say, well, that's just five aggregates. You know, form, feeling, perception, volition, consciousness. So that's just one of the ideas about seeing things divided up into the parts. And actually the five aggregates of clinging, the panch upadana kanda, are really the main focus of the object of meditation in vipassana meditation. Along with the sixfold sense sphere. But the sixfold sense sphere also belongs, is basically one of the aggregates, belongs to the aggregates also. So sometimes it's a little bit complicated theory. They talk about the five aggregates and people think it's some pie in the sky theory or something, but actually it's not. It's about actually what is happening in our body and mind all the time. But it's because we cling to these various aspects of our body and mind experience, and we don't see them divided up into their impermanent aspects, that we cling to it and take it as a whole and get deluded into thinking that it's an I or that owns and controls this body-mind process and doesn't really see it in its impermanence. So the whole purpose of the Buddha's teaching is about understanding suffering, the cause of suffering, that there's a cessation of suffering and the path leading to the cessation of suffering. And at the beginning of the Satipatthana Sutta, Yesterday I mentioned about the Satipatthana Sutta, and we're sort of following that progression of insight. At the very beginning of the sutra, he says, this is the direct way for the overcoming of sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair, for abolishing ignorance, for entering the path leading to the end of suffering. And again, we mentioned how it starts with sitting down and using this body as one's laboratory, and the mind is the microscope, and investigating this body and mind to see really how it ticks, you know, how it operates, and to get to the source of the mind to understand how the mind creates, you know, the world basically, and especially creates its own experience of suffering or the experience of happiness. So the five aggregates of clinging again are like a five, sort of like a five-layered cake, you might say. And the bottom, of course, whether it's the bottom or the top, it's not really that way. But you know, the body is the outer layer, or it's easier to see it as five concentric circles. Actually, I've actually made up a diagram of this. I don't have any copies of it, but if you can imagine five concentric circles, you know, there's a big circle, and inside that there's another one, and inside, inside, and that inside. So those are similar to like the five aggregates of clinging. So the outside circle is this body in the material world, these things that we're seeing and hearing, or smelling and tasting. So it's the outer experience, you know, when you look here and you see, you know, your vision stops at this skin, right? And the colors that are on the surface, and that's what your vision stops there. And you're just seeing the outside. And then we get cling to that, and then we form our opinions based on our past experience, our opinions about that object. And basically that means the six senses, whether it's sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, or our thoughts, and then we get attached to them. It's because we only see the outside. So in the Vipassana meditation, or in the four foundations of mindfulness, you know, the kaya no sati, the foundation of the body, mindfulness of the body. So, you know, that brings your attention to examine this body. And first you get to the surface of the body, and then you go under the skin to feel what this body is made up of. And so what is the body made up of? You know, you could say, okay, hair, skin, nails, teeth, bones, flesh, the 32 body parts, right? But what are those made up of? Well, let's even put aside that. Why don't we just say, according to science, cells, molecules, atoms, protons, neutrons, electrons, and quarks, or whatever else you want to imagine. But, you know, we can just keep it at cells, molecules, and atoms. And each atom has electrons moving around it, right? How many of you know basic chemistry or biology? You know, that every element has a certain amount of electrons, and that determines its quality. But what are electrons? Why do they call it electrons? Because it's electricity. So that's just energy. So what all this gets to is that, you know, if you dissect and bisect all the material elements down to their essence, it's just energy. So that matter is just energy. Condensed energy. You know, this hard meat bone body, you know, that you feel is basically just condensed energy. I mean, this is seeing it with the eye of wisdom, of course. But that is the, you know, the process of the vipassana. And you can actually feel that, actually. You know, when you meditate and you focus your attention inside, and that's what I was trying to suggest to you this morning when doing the standing meditation and kind of scanning through the body, feeling the various, you know, vibrations in your hands and the, you know, different places and in the face. That if you keep your attention there long enough and pay attention to and develop your concentration and mindfulness, then you'll start experiencing just, you know, so many sensations coming and going. And if that's developed to a high degree, then you can experience the body as just a mass of vibration and sensation. And the feeling, the hard edges of the body, the solid feeling and hard edges of the body will start to dissolve. And you'll experience just a mass of sort of vibrations. And the feeling of the body can actually disappear. You know, to become very light, the heaviness of the body would disappear, and it would feel like it's just a bag of air, or even the, you know, the boundaries of it will dissolve. So, you know, that's an aspect of the vipassana, seeing the reality as it is. And because of ignorance and delusion, the mind creates and holds on to this perception that the body is something hard and real, you know, or solid, and there, and that it belongs to me. And that's when the mind then struggles. So the mindfulness of the body, it's, you know, there's sections of the mindfulness sutta, which first, after using the breath, is used to bring your attention from the external world to the body, to the surface of the body, you know, to the entrance of the nostrils, or the expanding and contracting of the abdomen. So the breath is just a tool to help bring your attention from the external world to the body. But once you get to the body, the breath is no longer that important. And you get under the skin. And once you're able to tune in and feel the sensations arising and vanishing, then at that point the breath may disappear or seem to disappear, and at that point it's redundant. It's no longer necessary. Because the sensations, and the subtler sensations, are even subtler than the breath. And so you use those to help take the mind deeper inside. And so that it comes to the second foundation of the second foundation of mindfulness, the vedanas, the level of feelings or sensations. So once you get under the skin, you know, the outside body disappears. Just as when you know, let's say you take a piece of skin. You know, you rip off a piece of your skin and place it under a microscope. And, you know, the outside, you might see the outside piece of skin. Once you put it in the microscope and turn up the microscope 5 or 10 degrees, then what do you see? You see skin? No, you just see cells. And if you turn up the power another 30 or 40 or 50, then cells disappear. And you see just molecules. You might see DNA or all these other good stuff. And if you keep turning up, then you might see an atom. And if you have an atom smasher, you can smash the atom and experience pure energy. So like that, the mind, the stronger your concentration is, it's like turning up the power of the microscope is correspondingly to the amount of your concentration. If you had concentration to the extent of, let's say, just a momentary concentration, then it would be, you know, a little bit. If you turn it up to the state of excess concentration, it becomes more detailed and clear. If you make it up to the state of first jhana, and second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, each one of those levels makes the clarity and the magnification of the details of those things that much more. I hope I'm not losing anybody here. You kind of have to, you know, try to follow along, but for the benefit of those who, you know, have already been meditating for some time, you know, I want to try to explain, you know, how the progressive steps in the practice, especially in Vipassana. Because a lot of people get stuck on just the breathing and kind of don't know where to go from there or what's next, you know. So the foundation, getting established with awareness in the body and then examining the body so the mind loses its attachment to it, so you can let it go. And also to the pains, the things that block our meditation, we're trying to meditate. You know, attachment and clinging to the various pains, you know, are what, you know, blocks our concentration. So we, by examining the body and by building up your concentration, and as you're building up the concentration and seeing just vibrations, those hard pains disappear. And then you're able to sit through much, much longer. Just feeling the body as an amorphous mass of vibrations. And letting the concept of my body also kind of fade out of the mind. So then you're focusing on the Vedanas, the feelings. I mean, it's the pleasant, painful, neutral feelings that are coming through the body, but not only the body. But also, because you're also will be able to hear things, that when sounds come through, or smells, or tastes, or any of the, or even the memories or states of mind, you see how the mind has aversion to some and attachment to others. So there's some pleasant body sensations, kind of so you can see how the mind is attracted by pain or pleasure to some. And even certain sounds. The sound of a bird chirping might be pleasant. And the sound of a screeching brakes or something, you know, sends shivers up your spine. Or certain smells. So the mind gets caught between these pleasurable and disagreeable sense stimulations. So that's the contemplation of the feelings, because we get stuck on those, just as you were stuck on the body. Because when you get stuck on the outside of the body, oh, what a beautiful person, oh, look at their hair, look at their eyes. So we get stuck on the outside and we can't go inside because we're clinging to these superficial outside marks. So, you know, all the Buddha's teachings about the asubha meditation and contemplating the impermanence is about learning, helping to the mind to let go of the outer surfaces in order to keep going inside. But we get stuck. At each of these aggregates, we get stuck. Like a fly getting stuck on the fly paper. And doesn't allow us to go inside. So, but we identify mostly with, you know, the external forms. That's why the contemplation of the body has many different aspects of it. to overcome that clinging. And then the feelings. The feelings are even stronger in the sense, especially the painful feelings. Because the mind is always trying to get away from pain, get away from pain. And struggles to get away from the painful feelings. But we understand that both pleasurable and painful feelings are created in the mind, where the physical forms are basically belong to the physical matter or the energy. But the feelings are vibrations that the mind then labels as being painful or pleasant, based on your past experience. And what may have been a painful feeling at one time could change into a pleasant feeling. And it's just our resistance to pain that keeps reinforcing these ideas of pain, when in reality there's just a sensation. Take the dentist office, right? People have this fear of going to the dentist office because when they've gone there before and they have their teeth drilled, all these painful feelings, so they had this great aversion to the dentist chair, anticipating this pain that's going to come. And now when I go to the dentist, I tell them, no Novocaine. Don't give me any Novocaine. They kind of look at me like, this guy for real? And just sit there and let them drill without taking any painkiller, and just opening up and just feeling all the sensations just whizzing through the nervous system, but letting go and just relaxing and letting go, and actually laugh and be happy at the same time, because you're developing wisdom and you're seeing how the mind is artificially creating its fear and suffering out of things that are essentially empty vibrations. But that is, part of the, the training the mind. But to give insights. Or even mosquitoes, sitting outside and mosquitoes. I can't sit here, too many mosquitoes are biting. In Sri Lanka, I used to sit outside at 5 o'clock in the afternoon with these big tapawani mosquitoes, great big ones. take off my upper robe and just let them, come to the body hundreds at a time, just sending metta. And you'd be well and happy. When I was young, I ate lots of red beef and meat, caused the death of animals, so take my blood and send them metta. You can overcome that resistance and aversion, and you'll be surprised at how the mind opens up. But I'm just saying that because it's the feelings, the clinging to painful and painful and pleasant feelings that are largely created in the mind. And once you're able to let go of the feelings, then the mind, reaches a subtler level. Then the third aggregate of perception, or sanya, are the mental pictures that are created in the mind through the vibrations. So let's say, your eyes are closed and you hear a sound. And the sound is just a hearing vibration. But because of memory and language, that it identifies, you hear a sound, and its sound goes into the memory, like, Google search, what's that vibration? Oh, that's a bird chirping, or a door slamming, or a car driving down the road. So it's matching up a memory of a vibration and giving it a mental picture or a label that makes it stand out from everything else. That's perception. It's the function of perception. But then we cling to the perception again as being real and being either a pleasant or a painful. The feeling is associated with perception. And these become fixed in our mind. And then we don't allow for any deviation. Every time we hear or see or smell the same kind of thing, automatically we put up a block to what we think we don't like, as opposed to what we think we like, and we get attachments to it. So the mind is caught between the tug of war, between attachments and aversions, just because of this mental conditioning, when ultimately those sensations don't have any ultimate absolute value of being painful or pleasant, ugly or beautiful, this or that. These are all imputed by the mind or superficially imposed by the mind and of course by society and everything else. But we remain in a prison of that, the mental prison of being caught and clinging to the various perceptions and feelings, taking them to be real entities, and actually they're just mental bubbles, like a bubble, a mental bubble that arises in the mind. So once we can see through the perception and stop clinging to perception, that's why the mental noting is a valuable tool or technique in vipassana. It means when you feel something, you know, if you hear something, you make a note. It's just hearing. Not, I am hearing a car, I am hearing this or that. It's just hearing. It's just a hearing vibration. Or sound vibration. You don't deliberately call it a particular object, because that's a perception that then the mind will cling to and bring in its memory of the past and project it into the future and then all kinds of worries. So it's all a very very deep and precise kind of sort of the patterns that, you know, the Buddha discovered by, you know, his own deep meditation and wisdom. He really saw how the mind works in its web, creating its intricate web of karmic interreactions of feeling, perception, and then volition. Because we create karma based on these feelings and perceptions. We create karma either to get what we think we want by breaking precepts or anything else, or getting away from what we think we don't want. In the same way, breaking precepts, doing negative behavior, and compounding suffering over and over. So that's sort of the dilemma and the situation that, you know, exists in our mind. And so vipassana meditation is the training to see that that process, and through the practice of the Dhamma, that means the mindfulness and the right effort and the wisdom, cultivating mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, and the right effort, we're able to reprogram or rewire our nervous system. Rewire the brain. Now modern science is talking about plasticity, you know, brain plasticity, that the brain can actually be changed. Before, in the old scientific method, the brain was said to be hardwired and you can never change it, and so on. But now even science is understanding that that's not true. And the mind can be very pliable and malleable, and to be able to change its functioning, rewire it at will. Of course, it takes some time and effort, but it can be done. And that's precisely what the Buddha knew. And so he rewired his brain from greed, hatred, and delusion to non-attachment, love, and wisdom. But rewiring it through using the natural inherent powers that lie within the mind, the powers of concentration, mindfulness, and wisdom. So, So we talked about the layers of the aggregates, you know, the form, feeling, the perception, and then the volition. Basically, that's the karma that we create going after the objects of our hate or love or attachment and aversion, creating karma to either get away or hold on to what we're believing is real to us. And then the consciousness is the fifth and most subtle of the aggregates. And the consciousness is basically the sense of I, or along with consciousness, for the ignorant person, the sense of I arises like a parasite. It gets a free lunch. It arises with consciousness, the sense of I own this consciousness, or I am a seer, doer, hearer, taster, smeller, thinker. But the Buddha saw that actually that's an illusion. And this I is something that's just created within the mind out of ignorance and doesn't really exist as any self-existing entity. And that's why he called it no self. Or it's not some kind of permanent soul that's inside of you, this sense of I, or the consciousness. So the consciousness is basically the knowing faculty. But for the ignorant person, the I has attached itself to consciousness. So basically, you know, the aggregate of clinging, we're clinging to the consciousness as being I, me, and mine. But that's the subtlest thing to observe. So the five aggregates, in that way, each one is subtler than the next one. Or the body is the grossest one, and the next subtler one is the sensations, the next subtler one is the perceptions, the next subtler one is the volitional activities, and the subtlest one is the consciousness itself. That's why we can't remove the ego by just wanting to, or can't remove the ego. You can remove desire and aversion to a certain extent, but the sense of I is deeper rooted. You know, it's grounded in the consciousness itself. So that's why we can let go of physical forms even. You can detach from physical forms. You can even detach from feelings. You can detach from perceptions. You can even detach from the volitional formations. And once you've transcended all of those in deep meditation, when the feeling of body's disappeared, when you've gone beyond pleasure and pain, when the mind stops all of its perceptions, and there in the middle is, I'm close to Nibbana. I'm a good meditator. So even though everything else has kind of disappeared, that the sense of I is still kind of holding on, you know, for dear life to the consciousness and doesn't want to let go of itself. And many people get to that point and then they get stuck. And they can't seem to totally go beyond it. Because that's the Sakkaya Ditti. The Sakkaya Ditti is clinging to this sense of the I as somehow being me. And that's why only with the entrance of the Sotapanna, the experience of the entering the stream, does, because of your previous practice, at some point that I will totally transcend. And when your wisdom is built up enough to be able to let go of it, then it will finally totally dissolve. And that's when you can experience the liberation and directly understand no self. That the feeling of I is simply an illusion. It's created by craving and ignorance. And it's also the source of suffering, because it's the I that suffers, actually. And so when the I is transcended, then everything exists in its own natural state. There's no more resistance and suffering. That's why the five aggregates can still exist, but there's no suffering. The Buddha also had five aggregates, but he didn't suffer on account of it. They call the five aggregates of of clinging and what the suffering is. So that's the progression and the deepening of insight, and how the five aggregates are like stepping stone to the next one. And the four foundations of mindfulness are, even though the four foundations of mindfulness are mentioned as, you know, the body, then feelings, mind states, it doesn't specifically mention sanya or volition activities, but, you know, those are assumed and, you know, existing at the same time. But as long as you're clinging on to the outside objects, you won't develop the subtlety of awareness to the Vedanas. And when you're clinging to the Vedanas, you won't be able to clearly see the perceptions, because they distort the subtler ones. And then when we let go of the perceptions, then you can clearly see the arising of thought. So thoughts arise at the level of volition. It's the I want to do something. Or the thoughts that arise are arising at that level between sanya and sankara, are where the volitional thoughts are arising. So if you're still clinging on to form, feeling, and perception, that's why you still get lost in your thoughts. But when you can let go of form, feeling, and perception, then you'll be there when the first blip of thought arises, boom, the mindfulness will be right on top of it and dissolve it before it comes up through the nervous system and engages the mind. And then only when you can even let go of the volitional activities, which is the thought of I, you'll come down to the consciousness. You'll be left with the consciousness itself, and you can clearly see the little I trying to hold on, and then you apply your wisdom to that and it disappears. So that's just in a kind of a little intellectual theory, the progression and how one contemplates the five aggregates of clinging in the Vipassana meditation. Did I lose anybody? How many people got lost? Okay, now I want to kind of finish this talk with something I mentioned yesterday, explaining the trick of Vipassana. Where Mara, you know, he's dominated our mind. Mara is the one who says, I own these aggregates are real, and especially the sense of I and me. And the ego is trying to protect its turf. It's like these drug sellers, they try to protect their turf, right? Anybody comes in their territory, they kill them and so on. So Mara is trying to protect its turf of its attachments, its prejudices, its delusions, its greed and objects of its greed and hatred. So he's trying to protect it by throwing up all kinds of smoke screens, all kinds of good sounding excuses why we should do this and that and the other thing. Because, you know, he doesn't want you to become free. But when you start developing wisdom, then it starts to fight against the Mara. And, you know, wisdom is a threat to Mara. And it's like cornering a criminal, you know, back into a corner. He'll start panicking and trying to do anything to escape. So in the same way, when we start to develop wisdom into anicca, dukkha, anatta, Mara gets scared. We start running around and even trying to, you know, save itself in any way it can. And that's why when people meditate, these forces of the hindrances are Mara's escape. He doesn't want you to meditate. So these hindrances, Mara throws up these hindrances, like the Buddha when last night when he meditated, right? Mara came in with the Dixie chicks and all that, and all the storms and, you know, excuse my contemporary language. So therefore we have to outfox Mara. So Mara has tricked our mind into clinging and grasping and suffering. So we have to out-trick it. So Vipassana meditation is a way to out-trick Mara. So how do we do that? It's through the Anicca Sanya, by developing the wisdom of Anicca, Dukkha and Anatta. But the perception of impermanence is the first level of insight. You know, after you've gained some level of tranquility, as we mentioned, you get the mind centered sort of in the present moment, and being aware of, you know, sitting, breathing, then you start opening up and feeling the various sensations that come and go. You know, a little itch here, and a muscle spasm over here, and a little ache down there, and, you know, a little pricking sensation here, and the pulse of blood here. And as you're holding the mind relaxed and focused, it just builds up speed. And the more calmer and clearer the mind is and concentrated, that speed builds up. Because again, what is this body? Nothing but billions and trillions of cells and molecules and atoms that are constantly vibrating and interacting, producing sensation. So you can feel them. But only if the mind is concentrated and the power of the microscope turned up to a high degree. But it's a deliberate exercise. So that's why holding on to the breath is actually a hindrance for Vipassana. And that's why you don't worry if the breath has disappeared, let it go. And as soon as you've reached the stage of initial tranquility, you can start letting it go. And once you pick up and tune into the flow of impermanence, that's its own concentration. And the mind becomes very, very concentrated. And you can start feeling sensations randomly just arising, you know, all over the body. And you deliberately tune into them. That's called tuning in to the flow of impermanence. But you're training yourself just to notice the sensation and let go of it. Because there's always something else to notice. So you don't keep, you don't keep your mind on any one sensation. This is sort of the opposite of the idea of concentration. You want to concentrate on one object and ignore everything else. Vipassana is the opposite. You want to deliberately tune in to the arising and vanishing of sensations and increase the speed. The more the merrier. And you don't want to focus on any particular one. You just want to notice it as it arises and seeing how it vanishes. So just, and then there's something else that arises and vanishes. And another one, and another one. Starting in the body, but then you open up, and also in between the sensations, you know, sound comes. And then in between that, a thought may arise, oh, puta, dua, food, whatever it is. You know, but you're not clinging. It's just a little blip, like blips on a radar screen. But you're training your mind to just notice and release, notice and release, notice and release, notice and release. And these objects are basically form, feeling, perception. And you notice a perception, like you hear a sound, and you can see the little mental label of, you know, door slamming, and just arise and vanish out the mind. But then you feel, you don't let the mind hold on to that. You feel something over here, earth element or body vibration. And then don't cling on to that. You know, you feel something over here. Another sense. So you let them alternate. Because look at these senses are open for business 24/7. And there's always thousands of things coming through our senses. But normally we think they disturb us. But in meditation actually, that's the substance of the meditation. Because we're trying to develop insight and to transform the nervous system. So you tune into the arising and vanishing. And so there's no time for perceptions to hold on. The mind creates its idea of the world because of attachment. So I like to use the example of the child's coloring book. Mandy, you have a child's coloring book when you were younger? What does it look like? It's a bunch of dots on a page. And then your mother gives you a red crayon and says, well, connect these dots. And here's a green crayon, connect these dots. So as you connect the dots, then, Donald Duck, Mickey Mouse. It's because you connected the dots. But just looking at the dots by themselves on the page doesn't give you anything to think about. They don't mean anything. But when you connect the dots, then it brings this picture into place. Well, that's what happens in the mental process. Because of our clinging, we're holding on to a series of dots that then produce a perception and calls it this or that thing, whether it's a smell or taste, feeling in the body, the sight. And so the trick in Vipassana is you build up the rate of perception and just paying attention to the individual dots as they arise and vanish. A dot of body feeling, a dot of sound, another dot of body feeling, a dot of thought, a dot of smell, dot of in-breath, a dot of sensation, a dot of the out-breath, a dot of hearing. And if ideally alternate, because there's always things happening, and the mind gets confused. It upsets its circuitry. It's like blowing a circuit. You know? Short-circuited. And so the thoughts stop. And the perceptions cease in the mind. And at that time, that's when you can experience emptiness or the pure awareness. The consciousness is no longer able to create perceptions in individual entities because of that rapid speed of perception. You've outfoxed the mind. You've tricked the mind out of itself. And along with it is the ego. Because the ego, the sense of I, exists in direct relationship to the amount of clinging you are exerting on any particular object or sensation, or even thought. So it's the sense of I is in direct proportion to the amount of attachment that you have to any experience, or any aggregate. So we have a lot of attachments to the consciousness, and that's why the sense of I keeps get regenerated over and over. But with each moment of hearing, seeing, tasting, smelling, touching, and thinking, those aggregates are kind of just arising and vanishing, and even consciousness. So there's a simile of the coloring book to give the illusion, and then there's also the simile of the propeller blade. If you have a propeller airplane, the old kind of airplanes, if you go out on the tarmac and you see one of these, you know, prop airplanes, and the propeller has 5 blades. Right? You with me?
Yes.
And when it stops there, you see all 5 blades. What happens when they start the engine? It builds up speed. And when it's at high speed, they seem to disappear. And you can't even see them. Because it's built up speed. And there was a story 1 or 2 years ago about some model or some person who went on an airplane flight with a friend of hers in a propeller airplane. Then they got down and came out of the airplane. The girl went over to thank the pilot and turned around and walked right into the propeller, and it cut half of her face off and her arm because she didn't see it. Because it was still going around fast and it had disappeared. And I just said that not to scare you, but just to prove a point that in our normal perception, because of our ignorance and our clinging, our consciousness is very slow. our rate of perception is very slow because it gets stuck on this it's very slow. So the training, the trick in Vipassana is to speed up the rate of perception, and being aware of just the individual moments as they're arising and vanishing, so that there's no time for the mind to create perception or to hold on to anything. Therefore, the sense of I starts to disappear, because the I only exists in relationship to the clinging and ignorance that you have toward any object. So it's similar to an ice cube. The ego, the sense of I, is like an ice cube floating in water. So the ice cube is also just water, right? So within our consciousness, which is just light basically, awareness, there's this frozen ice cube or something that appears to be an I. But it has no more reality than a frozen ice cube. And when you let go of that, or when you're building up the rate of perception, and there's no holding to any object, it's like melting the ice cube, and the ice cube melts. And when it gets totally melted, then you experience just the pure awareness without any sense of I or any objects in it. And you know, that's sort of the mechanics of that, the mental process. It's just melting the ice cube of the ego, which is actually just an illusion within consciousness. And it's the wisdom that puts heat on that ice cube. It's the wisdom which is the heat that, you know, melts the delusions in the mind. But that wisdom comes from the wisdom of impermanence. So the perception of impermanence, because that's something we can directly observe. Because, you know, we can just listen and observe how things are coming and going. Then when the mind clings, we see, suffering arises there and then. As we can see, when there's clinging, then there's mental agitation. When there's no clinging, the mind is very expansive and open, and there's no agitation. And then the ego dissolves. So those three aspects of wisdom, the anicca, dukkha, and anatta, this is also kind of a systematic development. The anicca is the first thing, easiest thing to observe. Then the dukkha, and then finally anatta. And another thing about the consciousness, another analogy of the consciousness, is like a motion picture reel of film. You know, the old style film rolls are made up of individual frames with a little space between them. But when you run them through a projector with light, you don't see the spaces between the individual frames, and it looks like some smooth flowing movie that you're watching. But when you because we're attached to the consciousness and clinging to the various states of hearing, seeing, telling, smelling, tasting, and touching, you know, we don't see the spaces in between the moments of the consciousness. But when we tune in to the arising and vanishing of hearing, seeing, tasting, smelling, touching, and thinking, then we can actually see how one arises to be followed quickly by another. But because we don't have that high speed of perception, we get deluded in thinking it's consciousness is something. The ego consciousness in the world is something real. So these are the aspects and the training in Vipassana. Vipassana meditation is the training to penetrate that And that seeing reality is it as it is. I mean, seeing reality broken up into its individual parts as hearing, seeing, tasting, smelling, touching, thinking, or form, feeling, perception, volition, consciousness, in order to understand the deeper workings of the mind and how delusion has been created that keep us trapped in the suffering. So, and also to rewire the brain and nervous system. That you rewire your way of thinking so that this wisdom gets established within the mind and becomes a constant backdrop of all of your experiences. And that's how one eventually then, you know, makes progress on the stages of the, you know, the first deep experience of seeing that complete break of the ego consciousness and seeing the dissolution of the self and all conditioned phenomenon of the mind. You know, that's the experience of the, you know, the so on, or entering the stream. That means you had a direct glimpse of the truth of the mind, and now you're no longer deluded by that. You're no longer, you've broken the sakkaya ditti, and you've broken doubts. That's why the sakkaya ditti, vichikicca, and siddhabhata paramasa, clinging to rites and rituals, are the three fetters that are broken when one has the stream entry experience. But it's the sakkaya ditti that you see, that you clearly see. It's seeing that eliminates the doubts. Because before you have doubts, do I have a self, do I not have a self, what is the self? And we're always doubting. But once you get that clear experience, all those doubts about it vanish. And also, any ideas about clinging to rites and rituals, external rites and rituals, that's going to purify your mind of your past karma and so on, because you understand now how the mind is created, the karma, the web of karma. And it can only be decreated through the development of your wisdom and, transforming your actions, not by bathing in some holy water or by going around a holy mountain three times or any number of sort of rites and rituals. So that's the hallmark of that experience in seeing the clear transcendence of the ego. But one still has the ego consciousness in the mind. But now you're not deluded by it anymore. Before you were tricked and conned by it. All the con games of the ego, you easily gave into them. But now you're on guard more. And even though you still might be conned by the ego and gamed by it now and again, not so much as you were before. In each successive stage of once returning, never returning in the arhant is a stage of weakening that whole thing more and more and more. But, you know, at least following the Buddha's teaching and method of the Vipassana meditation, that is the path of the practice, using the four foundations of mindfulness and the Vipassana meditation as that particular way to outgame the mind, to trick the mind out of itself. So it's a very clever, I mean, only somebody like the Buddha could figure out something like that. Even all these brain scientists and all these astrophysicists, they know nothing really like that about the mind. They might be good in getting us to Mars and all that, but you know, going probing outer space. Buddha was probing inner space, taking the rocket ship into the origin of the world. It's at the source of the creation that lies within our mind. So, friends, that's what I thought I would share with you this afternoon and in this talk. And if you have any, do you have any questions? Okay, one question.
Ante, you know, this Mara is also in you, right?
Yes.
Mara is you.
It's a delusion.
And
it's
Mara is coming, or Mara came and all that.
It's a delusion within one's mind.
It's Mara.
Although when you read the sutras, there are some sutras that it appears that Mara is an actual person, and maybe in some sort of, you know, maybe it could be, but that's not what we're interested in. We're interested in seeing the Mara in our own mind. It's the part of our mind that doesn't want us to give up what it's clinging to. And it's taking, you know, there's a nice Dhammapada verse that says, one who takes the real to be unreal, and who takes the unreal to be real, they never arrive at the real. But the person who sees the real as the real and the unreal as the real, they arrive at the real. Which means the, you know, the truth. So Mara is always trying to turn everything upside down. Instead of seeing things as anicca, dukkha, and anatta, he says them as nitya, sukha, anatta. Or permanent, pleasurable, and self. But it's only the wisdom that attacks it. And it's a direct assault. Vipassana meditation is a full direct frontal assault on ignorance. And that's why not everybody may be ready to do that, because it's dirty battle. It gets down to the nitty gritty. But for those who are ready for it, that's why the Buddha taught it. Theoretically, yes, one could, but there has to be a way to stabilize your mind in the present moment, to get to your microscope. And you're trying to get in a laboratory, and a bunch of pack of dogs were attacking you outside the laboratory, and you can't even get into the laboratory. You have to devise some trick to get the dogs to go away. So you can open the door and go into the lab, sit down at your microscope. So the five hindrances are the dogs that are, you know, attacking our mind. So what are you going to do about them? Any method that you can do to get rid of them is okay. It doesn't have to be the breath. It could be any number of other things, but the breath is what is natural, and so the Buddha chose that as being the natural and most accessible form of concentration, but it may not work for everybody. So therefore, but until the five hindrances are weakened to a certain extent, you won't be able to have enough clear focus to develop any deeper kind of awareness. Okay, anyway, if there's any more questions, we'll also have a questions and answer session at the end of the day, as we did yesterday. But now we want to stand up and do a little standing meditation, and then have our afternoon session sitting.